And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. Boy, I'll tell you what, it's a busy day, busy news day. Thanks for joining us. Thank you so much for your belief and trust in us as we broadcast live each and every weeknight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, across the Global Star Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, and of course YouTube Live. We've got a great show lineup for you tonight. By the way, Joe Flynn, first hour, riding a shotgun with me will be Peter Barry-Chalka, a brilliant mind. And of course, that's the title of tonight's show, Brilliant Minds. Myself excluded, of course. So the first hour is going to be Peter Barry-Chalka. Second hour is going to be L.A. Marzulli. And third, of course, joined by Stan Dale. Had a wonderful conversation with Stan and Holly Dale. Great people today. Great people. And it's an amazing. They're just amazing. Great product, by the way, the EMP Shield. Very interesting, to say the least. Some news headlines, some information, of course. You know, it's interesting to me when I look at the array of headlines. There is so much right now going on with respect to the geopolitical realm. You've got North Korea firing another ballistic missile. All American cities now are apparently in target of North Korea. And that, of course, we can thank who for that? We can thank really multiple administrations. You can go back to the Korean conflict for that. Korean War conflict, police action. Some people, you know, are sticklers as to what that is. But that's does that concern any of you? The potential for a strike by North Korea. What do you think Donald Trump is going to do about that? That, of course, that's an issue. And then, of course, we have other issues as well. We've got this implosion within the power structure of Washington, D.C. When I say implosion, I'm talking about the outing of, and I spent today's program talking about this, the Office of Compliance within the Congressional, the Office of Compliance, an office that was started back in 1995. Since 1997 through the present day, $17.25 million in settlements being paid out, your tax dollars being paid out, and I covered that in the Doug Hagmann radio show this morning. And that's for anything from sexual harassment settlements, which appear to make the bulk of those settlements being paid out, to other types of discrimination. But when you look at the chart, to me it looks like this is all pretty much sexual harassment. And then you've got Conyers, of course, being in the crosshairs. And you know, it's amazing to me as well. People say, well, we have to wait before we judge. We have to, you know, we believe in the innocent before being proven guilty. But Conyers, of course, agreed to a settlement. Now, does that make a difference? Does settling make a difference? I tend to think it does. I tend to think the Conyers case is a lot different than, it's much different than the other cases. And Franken, of course, you've got the video or the images. And then the other representative from Texas, I believe it is, Joe Barton, the video that he had sent. Of course, Alex Jones did a pretty extensive exposure, pardon the pun there, of that particular case. So you've got all of that breaking out. Then, of course, you've got multiple other news items. I just wanted to double-check something here. The missile lands, where the missile landed off of the coast of Japan, it's about 600 miles away, and the North Korean leader, of course, readying the completion of their nuke force. So, North Korea launches ICBM, flight record 50 minutes, that's 50 minutes. General Mattis can reach any place in the world. And, of course, South Korea fires back. What does that mean? Well, obviously, South Korea is not going to wait until they get struck. I have a feeling that we're going to see in the next several days, we're going to see some sort of response from the United States or a coalition of countries to respond to North Korea. Now, you've got also, and I would not in any way, shape, or form minimize what's taking place with the independent counsel, the special counsel, Mueller, the soft coup that is taking place. You've got a lot of movement with Michael Flynn and Michael Flynn Jr. there. And I can see where this special counsel Mueller is kind of twisting some things. And I have a feeling none of this is going to end well. So keep your eyes on that. I'm going to be getting into that tomorrow, the backroom Flynn deals. By the way, I did mention that first on my morning program last week. And of course, the adage, tomorrow's headlines today. I think I hit that one out of the park. So at any rate, I don't want to keep the gentleman that I have so much regard for. In fact, his articles, his Twitter account at Pete Chowka has been retweeted by Sean Hannity and by President Donald Trump. You've got to check out Peter Barry Chowka's articles on Hagman Report as well as on American Thinker. With that, Peter, come on in.
Hello, Doug.
How you doing, sir?
A little bit rushed today, considering all the breaking news. It seems like whenever we have a scheduled appearance, my best laid plans for an outline and for what I plan to talk about have to be modified at the last minute, if not thrown out the window.
Absolutely.
Because of the incredible breaking news that we face every day now.
We do this all the time because we have an outline and it evolves, whether it's, we might establish that outline at 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and then by 5, it's something totally different. And then by airtime, you're looking at news that's being pushed aside by other headlines. So it's one of the hazards of the business and what we're doing today. But what's specifically on your radar right now, and what are you focused on?
Well, I plan to start tonight with a discussion of single-payer health care. That's what I've been writing about lately. I've had 3 articles at the Hagman Report about health care in the last month or two. And the latest one was titled, Single Payer is Communism with a Mask of Deceit. And that was prominent at thehagmanreport.com on Sunday. And then I'd also plan to talk about, according to the notes that I drafted last night, that are in the big picture, and that the tactics of Saul Alinsky, the radical theorist behind a lot of what we see the left doing today, the late radical theorist and the mentor of Hillary Clinton, by the way, who dedicated his book to Lucifer, Rules for Radicals, that his tactics are fully on display. And I was going to relate that to President Trump, and that President Trump is in the crosshairs of the left, the shadow government, and the deep state. But then today I woke up to see that, of course, Sean Hannity is equally in the crosshairs. And the big news there is that this coming Sunday's New York Times Magazine, one of the most influential publications in the country, has a cover story on Sean Hannity with a very incendiary cover photograph making him look demonic at the very least. And I just finished reading the 8,000 word article that is this cover story. And that's also an amazing thing to consider in light of all of the reporting that you and I, American Thinker, have done over the months on Fox News and on Sean Hannity. And I think we can take at least a small bow again to say that we, particularly you and I, identified very early on in this past spring and summer that John Hannity was doing extraordinary work to expose the deep state and the shadow government. He was in a tenuous position. He is in a tenuous position in his role at Fox News. And we correctly identified that his enemies, who are our major players out there, have been and continue to target him for takedown, as again, if they can, another step to taking down their primary target, that is President Trump.
Peter, the primary target, as I see it, is President Donald Trump. And we, as you and I spoke, and I think we've been vindicated, you and I, in large part, because I've gotten so much email about our coverage of Sean Hannity. Not Fox News, but Sean Hannity. And the majority of the emails are saying, I'm glad you're sticking up for at least Sean Hannity. I'm glad you're sticking up for him. I'm glad you've got a six, at least in the alternative media. And then I've gotten actually emails from self-professed conservatives saying, why are you sticking up for Sean Hannity? He's part of the problem. He's part of the corporate media. And I don't get that. I don't understand that mindset, because I will always stand up for him as long as he continues to advance the agenda of the conservatives. And I think that's what he's doing. But I can't believe the blowback we're getting and we've gotten, which, of course, is secondary to the favorable response. But my goodness. And then I sent you that I don't know whether you saw that video from Vox.
Oh, yes.
Oh, what a bunch of garbage that was. I addressed that on my morning program. What a bunch of garbage that was. And those people who don't know what I'm talking about, and I'm not making this up, self-titled gay wonk on Twitter, Carlos Maza, just spent 7.5 minutes, and Alex Jones addressed this last week, but 7.5 minutes talking about his caged masculinity. And of course, taking Sean Hannity to the woodshed for spreading conspiracy theories such as Uranium One, Benghazi, and such. Yeah, go figure. So anyway, but I think
Doug, it's interesting. I watched that video as well, Carlos Maza, and you probably know that prior to joining Vox in January of this year as a propagandist video maker, his entire professional career after he graduated from Wake Forest College or University in 2010. He worked for Media Matters for America from 2011 until January of this year. So this guy, in my opinion, is nothing but a sick propagandist for the vile, discredited, or should be discredited left. And also Vox, the website which he works for, and by the way, Vox on November 14th did a very similar article to what Maza did in his video production attacking Sean Hannity. Vox website, which is pretty popular now, it's about number 1,000 in popularity according to Alexa. This was co-founded by Ezra Klein in 2014. And there's an individual who I have particular enmity for. He's, in my opinion, nothing but a punk who came of age in the first decade of this century when he was a young 20-something college student, and he caught the wave of early blogging, which was the first real social media use of the internet in the early 2000s. And Klein was Ezra Klein was a college student, I believe, in California when he started blogging, and he personifies, in my opinion, the punk ethos that now rules the country and much of the mainstream media. And I actually had a run-in with him in 2007. I was writing some articles then for American Thinker about socialized medicine and Michael Moore and his work. And Klein at the time was, I forget who he was writing for. It might have been just his own blog. He was essentially a nobody, but he was coming up fast. He was a trendy, a metrosexual who was appealing to the left on the internet, and he and another character attacked me for some of the reporting I was doing, and said, in essence, and it might have been his exact words, who is this nobody, Peter Chalka? And I reflect on that because it was within the past week or two that I was once again referred to a nobody by, I forget who was writing this now, I sent you the excerpt of it. They took me on for, when President Trump retweeted me, of course, that puts you on some kind of map pretty quickly, and these leftists come out of the wood. So not only do you start to get thousands of messages on Twitter, if not tens of thousands, and angry attack tweets. That's another story that's probably not even worth getting into. But you have these self-styled journalists, leftists, deconstruct you and say, we've never heard of this guy, me. He's only following two people on Twitter. You know, as if that's where I get my news. Oh, yeah, I follow two people on Twitter. Because that I don't use Twitter. Jerks do. And this character writing about me also referred to me as a nobody. So I thought, maybe I should title these segments that we're doing News from Nobody. Or News from Nowhere. That's one of my favorite titles. In the 70s, there was a book about television news, when I was writing a series of articles on TV news and the future of television. And somebody, I forget who wrote it now, but deep in the mainstream news business, quoted a real top person as saying, in the network news department, saying, we report the news from nowhere. So, I don't know, you can play with these titles and these terms, but it's this is really an aside, though. I mean, this Ezra Klein character who's behind Fox is basically cut from the same cloth as Media Matters, and literally his right-hand man there now producing these videos, Carlos Maza, the self-styled nerd homosexual, is literally Media Matters for over 5 years of his professional career. But I had to wonder when I watched Maza's video attacking Sean Hannity, this was an extremely sophisticated video production. And I can't believe that Maza himself put this together. This looked like something
he did.
Money behind. And not only that, this is really the crux of this issue today. A close reading of the New York Times Magazine cover story on Sean Hannity, which is already online, Drudge linked to it today, and it will be out in print this coming Sunday. That article makes generous use of the same information that was generated by Vox, V-O-X News, which Carlos Maza works for, and which he covers in this a 7-minute video of his. In fact, he presents on that video, I believe, this individual named Alvin Chang.
Chang, right.
Who explains how he designed a computer software to evaluate the transcripts of Hannity's Fox News program, I believe, over the past 2 years or so. And Chang came up with the incredible claim, and this is quoted verbatim in the New York Times article, as well as in Vox, as well as in Maza's video. Chang claims that, I believe this is Chang's quote, that Hannity is now the media's, quote, top conspiracy theorist. And now Sean Hannity today kind of laughed off the New York Times story and said that it doesn't really disturb him at all. He cooperated closely with the New York Times writer and their photographer, including a spontaneous visit to the house that Sean grew up in on Long Island in the 1960s and 70s. They knocked on the door, and there are photographs of him in the Times article of him on the outside of this house. So it's a very detailed story, and from what I know about Sean Hannity, and I do know a lot, the article has a lot of interesting facts in it, but of course it's with a spin, and the most important thing about the article is what is left out, and that is a lot. In fact, it's all of the, you might say, exculpatory material which completely demolishes the theme of the article, which is that Sean Hannity is some loose cannon out there, an extreme right winger, an ignoramus at best, and, you know, a dangerous radical, as if he, Sean Hannity, is cooking up on his own with the help of one or two of his program producers all of this fake news. In fact, the article says early on, the Times article says that Hannity is guilty of, quote, fact-free, unquote, programs.
That's right.
Now, you and I both know, having followed his work very, very closely this year and studying it and literally following the leads, that if anything, it is not fact-free. And completely absent from this Times article is any mention of the stable of experts, bona fide, qualified, in many cases mainstream journalistic experts, who are the source of Hannity's facts and who appear frequently on his television, Fox News, and syndicated radio program. That includes John Solomon, who has I believe he's vice president now, as well as frequent contributor writer to The Hill publication, which is a credible mainstream publication. Sarah Carter, who's an award-winning journalist at Circa News. Greg Jarrett, who is an esteemed news person and attorney at Fox News, and others as well. But those are three of the top people who Hannity has relied on. So once again, we see the left's tactics in the media. It's not simply the story you tell in print or in broadcast, the story you spin, but it's the details, the real important facts that you completely avoid and leave out of your coverage. And of course, this is the bottom line. This is the name of the game of the cable news network CNN, which night after night, day after day, reports at the minutiae of the bad news about Donald Trump, which they send into the stratosphere in their reporting on it, while completely reporting the real news of what the Trump administration and President Trump are really doing and accomplishing for this country.
You are 100% right. And by the way, last night on Sean Hannity's program, he had, in addition to Greg Jarrett, he had Sidney Powell on. And I retweeted, or I sent a tweet out, Sidney Powell, who is a former federal prosecutor. And the reason I bring this up is because she knows, of course, what's taking place right now behind the Mueller probe. And she was involved in witnessing what happened with Arthur Andersen, the accounting firm, during the Enron situation, the Enron deal. And the reason I bring this up is because no one else in the corporate media is bringing people like Sidney Powell on. We're going to have her on, I believe, sometime here within the next month or so. Again, former federal prosecutor, tremendous prosecutor. And she actually retweeted what I wrote. But she stated last night, I'll just read you my tweet, and I'm going somewhere with this. When in modern history has there been such transparent anti-American and seditious activity against a sitting president? That's me asking that question. And then what she said last night, that's the wrong tweet. Sorry about that. Where'd it go? Okay. Quite a few. Okay. Well, I guess I just screwed up here. I can't find the tweet, but she was, depicting Mueller and team from former great prosecutor, or former former federal prosecutor and author Sidney Powell. Here's the quote: "We're not seeing mission creep." It is referenced, by the way, to what Mueller is doing, but creeps on a mission to destabilize and destroy the president. And the reason I mentioned this and brought this up, and sorry about taking me so long, is I think that on a corporate media level, who else except for Sean Hannity is attempting to stop this or expose this probe for what it is? Certainly no one else. Of course, those in his orbit are, but you've got MSNBC, you've got all the three-letter networks, all taking down and destabilizing President Donald Trump, and of course trying to snuff out the will of the American people. So anyway, we need to get behind. Everyone needs to get behind, I believe, Sean Hannity, and regardless of how much flack we would take for doing so. That's my view.
Well, and it's my view as well. And Hannity was prescient several years ago when he gave his opinion that the mainstream media and mainstream journalism is dead. And how right he was in predicting that. And now I agree with you. He's the last one left standing in the prominent mainstream media who calls out the facts and the truth, or the closest thing to it, night after night, day after day. Now, of course, there are others on Fox News, and to an extent, very, very rarely on CNN in terms of their occasional guests who are usually shouted down by the cacophony of left-wing opposition that dominates CNN. You know, Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, the news reporting of Fox is pretty fair and balanced. But again, as you said, nobody is bringing out this important, essential information, which at one time would have been in the mainstream media. I mean, look at the impeachment of Richard Nixon. The media then was able to ferret out that story and bring down a president. And if it was anything today like it was then, we would see a clear, objective focus on what the left is doing to take down Donald Trump and what the left has done to do the very things, criminal things, in many cases, that they are alleging the Trump administration has done. So we're through the looking glass here and holding on for dear life as we search out the truth and try to report it. There was no clearer example of how completely corrupt and useless and dangerous the mainstream media is than the coverage of CNN last night. I watched that very closely because of their seizing on the what they claim was the racist comment of Donald Trump when right. he used the term Pocahontas to bring Senator Elizabeth Warren into the ceremony honoring the Navajo Indians who helped out with the code work of World War II. And Molly Hemingway today at the American Federalist had an excellent article on that, which was linked, I believe, from Real Clear Politics, saying, of course, Trump was not using a racist term. He was not being a racist. What he was doing was, in an attempt at humor, calling out the real racism of Senator Warren, Elizabeth Warren, in claiming to her benefit, to her financial and career benefit over the years, that she was a part Native American, when that myth, that lie, has been completely exposed and demolished by, among others, Native American scholars. You just have to Google that to find the evidence of how Elizabeth Warren is a sick liar for claiming that she is part American Indian and getting her position at Harvard, or reinforcing her position at Harvard because of that, and going where she is today, taking it all the way to the United States Senate. So, you know, the media, in fact, Hemingway points out that in some of the coverage of this incident involving President Trump yesterday and his use of the term Pocahontas to refer to Senator Warren, some of the media made it seem like Elizabeth Warren actually is part Indian. So you had fake news on top of fake news, and I mean, really, it's just a complete waste of time to watch CNN, but some of us have to do it occasionally so we can help to expose what they're doing, but it's, you need to take a shower afterwards.
I have to tell you, so many people, I feel bad for you and me too, having to watch, you know, Rachel Maddow or Chris Matthews or CNN. It's maddening, but it's so important because I really have never seen anything like this in the history of cable news. Now, there was an email that I got right as soon as we posted the show for the night and your name came up on the itinerary. Somebody had emailed me and he had brought this up. And let me ask you this question. We can go anywhere you want, but I figured since I have you, because I was thinking about this earlier. Do you see parallels today with the special prosecutor, or not parallels, or something totally opposite, with the special prosecutor going after Donald Trump, as you saw, you being really into this, with respect to Richard Nixon and the Watergate committee? Do you see parallels here, or do you see something that's totally different? And that's from Roger in Kansas City, Kansas. Thanks, Roger.
Well, Roger, if you're watching or listening, yes, I see major parallels. Of course, we're 45 years down the road from the start of the successful attempt to bring down Richard Nixon, or take down Richard Nixon. But yes, one parallel is, well, actually two parallels I can name right off the bat. One is the denigration of the President of the United States, Richard Nixon, now Donald Trump, from the outset, having nothing to do with Watergate or even with the alleged Russia collusion. Trump, as well as Nixon, were targets from the get-go, pretty much, of the left, the shadow government, and the deep state for eventual taking down. And it's an incremental piling on day after day, negative story after negative story, little things which are seized on. You know, did his press secretary, Sanders, really bake that Thanksgiving pie? Or, you know, is Trump playing golf too much? Is too much money being spent on his security? Never once mentioning the security that was necessary for Barack Hussein Obama and his world-trotting wife and mother-in-law and children when he was president, or his numerous vacations and golf outings. So, you know, the same thing was done with Nixon, cheering on the denigration of Richard Nixon from when he was inaugurated in January 1969, and of course the Watergate break-in wasn't until June of 1972. And that took a while to get going, the coverage of that. And the common understanding is that it was journalists Woodward and Bernstein of the Washington Post that really got that moving, and they did. But many questions remain, and in fact books have been written about where they were really getting a lot of their material that besmirched Nixon and eventually built the case against him. And of course another parallel is how the media then, which was of course fairer and more objective than it is now, which is not to say it wasn't skewed left then, but the media then was also failing to put Nixon's activities and the activities of his administration vis-a-vis Watergate break-in into any kind of context. The literature, the mainstream literature, is replete with books, articles, reminiscences about prior Democrat presidents prior to Nixon, LBJ, Jack Kennedy, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who were up to their eyeballs in dirty tricks, in actual criminality. I mean, LBJ, where do you begin?
That would take an encyclopedia for his
and even tricks. Even JFK, who, you know, I think we have some respect for, but he was a very flawed character.
Yep.
And just read the book by Seymour Hersh, The Dark Side of Camelot, which was published in 1997 and almost finished off Hersh's career. Hersh being a card-carrying leftist, but he wrote an incredible book based on years of research deconstructing the Camelot myth. And after you read that, you just have to scratch your head and go, what goes on here? This is just amazing. But, so there's that parallel. And unfortunately, I see, well, even the events of the last week or two, with the focus even of the mainstream media and of some Democrats on the activities of that are now exposed of Senator Franken and Representative Conyers, which if they were Republicans, they'd probably be out of there. They'd be long gone by now. But the media, to my surprise at first, was willing to go along with reporting those stories. They're kind of fading now. But, you know, I wrote an article, and I think we were on the same page there as well, with be careful what you wish for. If you wish for the taking down of Al Franken for these allegations, number one, you're going to get probably, as your next senator, Keith Ellison, the Muslim representative. He'll be the next senator.
No joy. Yeah.
Right. And also what it says about this meme that's being established of zero tolerance for anybody in public life who is accused. You know, Jacques Hughes, you're out of there. No trial, no jury, no judge. You're gone. And, you know, which is what they're trying to do to Judge Roy Moore in Alabama. But as I think we agree, the big target in the crosshairs of the left, the shadow government, and the deep state, the media, is President Donald Trump. So the more that the popular media, culture, politics can establish this zero tolerance policy, then they can turn that bullseye whenever they feel like it on Donald Trump. If they ratchet up again accusations from Trump's accusers from a year ago, who pretty much disappeared after he was elected, well, who knows what can happen. That's a very powerful inducement to at least half of the population, namely women. It pushes a button with many, many women, even Republican women, you know, since all women or almost all women say that they have had experience with sexual harassment or worse in their lives, not to deny that or to denigrate it, but, you know, you just have to throw that up into the political sphere and it gets mileage, just as for many years, for many decades, since the 1950s, pushing the button, well, establishing guilt among Caucasian Americans for what was done to African Americans or Black Americans over the years, including slavery going way back, pushing that button was a real inducement to advancing the agenda of the left over these years, and it works until this day, even though in the opinion of many, including many Black conservatives, we've not only gone very far towards establishing a colorblind society and ending racism, but racism is pretty hard to find. Black against white or white against Black. You wouldn't know that from listening to the left-wing politicians or the left-wing media. You'd think we were still in the age of the Ku Klux Klan, which of course was a Democrat institution, by the way, running the show.
You know, I might get a lot of emails for saying this. I don't see wholesale racism. I don't see it out there in the world. And maybe somebody might say that because I'm white, I'm a privileged white American, or claim I'm white privilege, but I really don't see, and I think you make a good point, I don't see wholesale racism. I see a lot of white guilt, not racism, out there right now. Now, that's not to say it doesn't exist in pockets and in certain conditions and certain areas, but...
Well, and Doug, the other area we can never go to is to investigate or discuss Black racism.
That's right.
In fact, we've had leading Black academics and media poobahs say that an African American is incapable of being racist. Many of them actually make this point because, I don't know, they were so discriminated against that even if they hate whites, that still doesn't qualify as racism, quote unquote, because they have a right to feel that way. And yet if you look at the statistics again, there is much more Black on white crime than the reverse. Rape actually is, what, like 1,000 times as frequently reported as white on Black rape. Not to say that any of these things are excusable or... But I believe you had a guest on at one point who wrote a book on this.
Colin Flaherty. Yeah, Colin Flaherty.
Right.
Yep.
And, you know, there are experts out there who are trying to bring this information objectively and without taint of hate or racism to the fore so we can simply see the whole context and the whole picture, and they can't get anywhere. Immediately they're called racists, and the fake meme goes on. So, yeah, it's up to us, I guess, and a handful of others to try to point this out to the peril of our own reputations online, but that's the way it is, I guess.
Good point. Very well said. Our guest, of course, or my guest, riding shotgun in the absence of Joe, of course, is Peter Barry Chalka. Follow Peter Chalka at Pete Chalka. That's on Twitter. Follow him. Stalk him. No, seriously, he is a lot of great information, a lot of great blurbs at Pete Chalka. of course, on Twitter. And if, make sure you read all of his columns at American Thinker and, of course, at Hageman Report. And Peter, I don't want to hijack your time because you're going to be coming back to Friday, right? Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
Good. All right.
You know, I was thinking, I want to mention this before I forget, because I thought it might be interesting to give a name or a small title to these regular appearances that I'm doing. And I thought, I mean, earlier I said maybe it could be news from nowhere or news from nobody. But my first choice would be something like Between the Lines, Peter Barrichalko, Between the Lines, because that was the title of a column that I was writing about 4 decades ago for a monthly magazine. And I was doing pretty much the same thing that I'm doing now, taking a look at mainstream news and also stories that I was covering in my period of gumshoe journalism. I use that term. I always thought it meant when you were a gumshoe journalist or investigated, it meant that you were pounding the pavement so often that you literally got chewing gum stuck to your shoe. But I've since seen, supposedly, that term originated from what was literally a gum-based shoe, a soft-soled shoe, which was worn by investigators who wanted to sort of tiptoe around and not be heard. So the title supposedly came from that. But unfortunately, the title Between the Lines has been used for a number of years by Joseph Farah of WorldNet Daily as the title of his columns there. So I thought, well, I don't want to be accused of plagiarizing him, even though I was using this title myself decades ago. But I thought maybe connecting the dots, because that's what we really convene to do here. I know you do that constantly in your reporting, and in particular on your morning program, in which you constantly paint the big picture by connecting the dots of all these apparently disparate stories that we are fielding hour by hour here now. But I thought I would just play with that concept and see what people think of it, or what you think of it, or whatever, or if we should even give it a title. But I did want to talk a little about what I planned originally to start with today.
Sure.
Before all of this other news came up. But that was just to touch briefly on the single-payer push. And this is also very, very current right now with health care. You know, health care, it needs to be remembered, there are few issues that are really larger. Yes, our national security is huge. I mean, if we're going to get blown up tomorrow by a North Korean nuke, yeah, that's number one. But in the longer term, healthcare is big. It affects literally all of us. It's the biggest business. It's the biggest collection of businesses. The price tag for healthcare in the United States now is over $3.5 trillion, with a T, dollars a year. And it's increasing at something like 5 times the rate of inflation. When I used to write about healthcare 40 years ago, I was saying, oh, it's like $500 million a year now, total. Now it's $3.5 trillion. And as we know, with that kind of concentration of wealth comes tremendous power and political power. So our healthcare choices are determined by the money at play and how it influences and buys off politicians. And, of course, the big change there was in March of 2010, when Obamacare was rammed through the United States Congress, and we're still living under the expanding ramifications of that abomination. And I'm trying to follow as closely as possible what's happening with the fate of the Obamacare mandate, which is the tax on income of people who choose not to buy forced, mandated, conventional medical insurance with the gun to their heads of the IRS policing this. And actually, I'm going to be writing about this in another article, which I hope to have up either Friday on the Hageman Report or soon afterwards, and that'll be the fourth in the series, and it will once again illustrate the smoking gun evidence that I have developed that centralized state control medical care, single payer, whatever, socialized medicine, communist medicine, is about controlling the population and not about improving our health. And that can be very, very well and clearly documented now, although that's a story that hardly ever, in fact, virtually never gets on any mainstream media, including Fox. So it's totally up to us to go there. But, you know, I like the title of the last article that I did, which was the Hagmann Report on Sunday. That is Sunday, November 25th, 2017. Yep. And these articles of mine, even after they scroll off the front page of the Hagmann Report, of HagmannReport.com, can be easily accessed by going to the right-hand column of the Hagmann Report, which under my name has my most recent four articles linked. And then if you click the arrow on the right, you can get eventual access to all of my previous articles, over 50 of them now. And in there are the three that I've written on healthcare, but the most recent one was Single Payer is Communism with a Mask of Deceit. And I like that word deceit because for those of us who were aware of what happened in the 1950s, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover wrote his famous book, Masters of Deceit, about the communist penetration of the world and of the United States, of the tactics they use. And it is it's deceit with a capital D that has allowed the left to upend public sentiment about socialized medicine. When the Clintons, Hillary and Bill, proposed their communist socialized medicine scheme in 1993, Hillary Care, that was so unpopular that it never even went to the Congress for a vote. It just died of its own. When Barack Hussein Obama came up with it and it was passed in the Congress in March of 2010, it had to use every legislative trick in the book in a Congress that had a veto-proof majority of Democrats, 60 votes in the Senate and whatever in the House, and they rammed it through with lies and fakery. And, of course, there's the famous quote by Nancy Pelosi, who said, well, of course, you have to read this 2,000-page, or no, you have to, we have to vote for this and enact it before we know what's really in it, because nobody had time or understanding to digest the 2,000 pages of the bill, Obamacare. And now, of course, it's expanded to 20,000-30,000 pages of rules and regulations. But between 2010 and now, and for all of those years after 2010, Obamacare, supposedly, according to the polls, was extremely unpopular. Now, according to most of the polls, and I think they're probably close to being right here, a majority of Americans seem to be in favor of state-controlled government medicine, and I think it's actually a bare majority that actually support single payer now, which scares me to death.
Oh yeah, Peter, how's that possible? Okay, for you go and forgive me, but from 1990, I'll say 1995, generously, under Clinton, Hillary Care, 92 maybe, to 2010. No. 2010, bang! It's thrust on our throats, and now 2017, people are asking for it, begging for it, saying it's okay. What the hell happened? How'd that happen? I'm sorry.
Well, it's the triumph of fake news again. Since I'd say starting about 2 years ago, in earnest, the mainstream media has slanted more than ever their coverage of healthcare issues, of Obamacare, of the future. What are we going to do? Are we going to repeal it or reform it or replace it? You know, the Republicans even bought into this. They couldn't just repeal it. They had to repeal and replace it. Well, by replacing, that means you're going to replace it with some additional new expansive government-centric statist program, which will compound the issues and get us farther away from a free market economy, which was which ruled in this country until fairly recently. And actually, it's since the 1960s and Medicare and Medicaid that healthcare in this country has been a mix of socialism and the free market. And that is what has really it's the government intervention in healthcare starting in earnest in the 60s that has created almost all of the problems that we see today in terms of access and cost, high cost. But, you know, if you look at the coverage in the mainstream for the past 2 years, and especially now that Trump, President Trump has been in there and, you know, one of his top promises, pledges was to repeal and replace Obamacare. And the left is digging in its heels on that. And story after story, oh, the 13 million people supposedly who will lose health care if the Republicans have their way, and they will be in desperate straits and will be dying in the streets. Well, 13 million Americans, if they are in fact getting health care under Obamacare, represents fewer than 4% of the population, and it would actually be easier and cheaper just to pay outright for their health care, whatever they need, rather than to make all of us suffer, all 330 million of us suffer under the brutality of Obamacare. I mean, it was Obamacare that gave rise to the Tea Party in 2009 and 2010. And of course, the media had its hand in diminishing and dismissing Obamacare, the Tea Party. And every story, you know, profiling people under treatment for cancer or with some rare disease who supposedly will be left with no care if the Republicans have their way. It's the same thing they're doing with the tax situation. Do we want to lower taxes on everyone in America and make our tax system simpler? No, according to the left and the media, because that will just be a handout to the rich, which, right, of course, is a very simplistic and inaccurate way of reading that. But, you know, we're surrounded. I mean, this is the triumph. What we are living in times of the triumph of propaganda, left-wing, socialist, communist, globalist, transnational, deep state, shadow government propaganda like we have never seen before in the history of the world. And the fact that it's occurring in the United States with our First Amendment and our supposedly free, fair, and objective press is absolutely shocking and depressing to the core. This eclipses things that were done in previous totalitarian fascistic regimes, because in those regimes, for example, the Soviet Union, which relied on some of the same methods of propaganda, it never was completely accepted by all of the population. In Russia, for example, under communism, you had an alternative press known as the Samizdat, which published a mimeographed, handed out, or cassette tapes of stories from the West, you know, the alternative point of view. And most people living in Russia knew it was BS, what Pravda and Izvestia were reporting. The problem with in the United States now is that it appears that a majority of people now, adults, and apparently a vast majority of younger people, millennials, by these lies and this fake news hook, line, and sinker, because the news has been associated with the culture. You capture the popular culture and the minds of people through that, especially the youth coming up, and then their politics will follow that. So since the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and really being turbocharged starting in the 1990s and to the present, our politics taken over by the left to the extent that there is virtually nothing left in the popular culture now that is not politically driven by the left. Films from Hollywood, mass market films, television, commercial broadcast television, even much of cable television, popular music, the disappearance of serious classical music. I mean, it's pretty much disappeared. Symphonies in cities and towns have gone out of business. Classical music, you can't find it in the places that still sell CDs of recorded music. It's gone. And that was a quality area of the culture that had been in existence for hundreds of years. In about 10 years, it's been completely expunged from the popular consciousness. And I mean, I could go on and on citing examples, But, I mean, it's why many of us eschew and avoid the popular culture and read and listen to and watch things from the past when America was great, because it isn't anymore, and it's reflected not only in our culture but in our degraded communist politics that are ruling the day.
I've got to tell you, that was probably one of the most eloquent and succinct diatribes, monologues, that right on the money. Now, we only have about a minute left. I don't want to take any part of that minute. Closing comments in advance of Friday.
Closing comments, listeners, viewers, please support us. HagmanReport.com, the Hagman Report program that you're watching or listening to right now or accessing via podcast, Doug's morning program on internet radio, Joe and John's afternoon program. I would appreciate your visiting my Twitter, P Chowka. That's twitter.com/PCHOWKA. I don't retweet a lot. I don't encumber it with a lot of retweeting nonsense. I simply use it to post links to my articles and my podcasts and now my upcoming broadcasts with Hagman Report. And that's all I ask is some attention, some consideration, and some thought given to my work. And I welcome responses on Twitter, pro and con. I'm willing to listen to anyone who takes the time to respond to me. Send me, if you follow me, you can send me a message, a private message on Twitter, and I promise to respond. And as always, I appreciate these opportunities, Doug. Glad to hear that Joe is getting better, and I look forward to being with you again on Friday.
Peter, welcome aboard. Thank you so much. I know there was kind of a last minute, hey, can you come on? But I'm so glad you did. And we're looking forward to Friday. And, of course, your latest at Hagman Report about the single-payer healthcare system, so important for everyone. Peter, until Friday, God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you, Doug. God bless our listeners and viewers.
Thank you. Folks, remember, right back. Network break. Stay right where you're at.